been in Austin, Texas, and now I'm driving in Austin, Texas.
That's Steve Mahan, retired director of the Santa Clara Valley Blind Center. He lost his sight years ago.
Intersection.
But in 2015, he was the first rider in a fully driverless vehicle on public roads, courtesy of Google's self-driving company, Waymo.
Horizontal paths.
5 years later, Waymo released a fully autonomous ride-hailing service to Phoenix's East Valley this fall, including Chandler and part of Tempe. Now people in the area can go from A to B in a car completely controlled by computers without anyone in the driver's seat. This driverless service is the first of its kind. Kevin Beastie with the Arizona Department of Transportation says it's a huge improvement for driver safety. He says every year, 30,000 people lose their lives on American roadways, mostly due to human error. He says a driverless operating system will be much easier to improve than our current system with people behind the wheel.
So we got tens of millions of operating systems out there on the roadway right now. Imagine a day that if we were able to limit that down to 5 operating systems. And if there was a problem, you can actually go in and tweak the system to address that problem, which is not available today.
I'm Casey Flanagan. On today's episode of Arizona in Focus from Cronkite News, the future of driverless technology in Arizona and how our decisions today will determine its direction. To get a better understanding of what this future will look like, I spoke with Andrew Maynard. He's an associate dean at Arizona State University's College of Global Futures and professor in the School for the Future of Innovation and Society. Maynard wrote the book Films from the Future, where he uses science fiction movies to examine how today's decisions surrounding future technologies will shape tomorrow. He says driverless technology feels safer than a human driver, but there's so much more to consider.
Have you been in a driverless car before?
I have, just once, and it was actually a good couple of years or so ago now. I've been in one of the Waymo vehicles.
How was that?
I was impressed. And so this being a couple of years ago, it was earlier technology than they now have on the road. They're improving all the time. I was quite frankly blown away by how adept the car was at navigating fairly complex road systems. And I must confess, I actually felt safer in it than I do with a number of human drivers.
How well do you think driverless car AI and human drivers will mesh?
This is always the big question. It's not how safer the computers, but how on earth will they deal with erratic and unpredictable humans? And I don't know is the answer. The data that we do have, and a lot of that is from companies like Waymo that have been gathering data from self-driving vehicles for a long time now on roads, is that things mesh together pretty well, certainly when you've got a grid-based road system and good weather conditions. So you don't have an awful lot of sort of human vehicle interaction there. People know that the rules of the roads and generally they stick with them. I think there are going to be some subtleties that are going to be really hard to overcome, where there are either unwritten rules or where there is a sort of form of signaling that you have between humans that computers can't quite get there yet. And so the type of scenario that I'm imagining is, say you've got a single lane road, and you tend to find this more on the East Coast or even in other countries, single lane road where there's an unwritten sort of set of communication signals between drivers as to sort of who stops, who goes, sort of how you negotiate that passage. And I think it's going to be incredibly hard to teach self-driving vehicles how to interpret those signals when you've got humans. But where you've got fairly straightforward road systems, of course, you're going to have the odd situation where you've got a four-way where the humans there are just not really paying attention, and that could stymie the vehicles. But I think we'll get over that. And to just add to this, one of the interesting things with the AI that's being developed is we're moving away from very strict rule AI to adaptable AI and sort of AI that makes fuzzy decisions. So it begins to behave a little bit more like a human. And I think that will actually help these vehicles navigate those sort of situations.
You mentioned straight roads and good weather conditions, making Arizona a great place to start this out. what happens when we take these cars to like bad weather conditions and bad roads?
I think it's a good starting place for ironing out some of the big challenges. But of course, there's got to be testing under tough conditions if we're really to avoid things that could go wrong when things aren't quite so neat and easy. So yes, when you get to tougher weather conditions, when you get to roads that are harder to navigate, when you get to areas where there are going to be more unexpected things happening. And of course, you can try and teach a vehicle about all the sorts of unexpected things it could encounter, but you can't cover everything.
How should we decide, and really importantly, who should decide what moral decisions these cars should make?
I actually must confess that I think that the discussions around moral decisions in some cases are a little bit manufactured. And I know that it's hip to talk about the trolley problem and what do we do when a self-driving vehicle has to decide who it kills. And I think that this is, it sidelines the conversation for two reasons. One is we used to developing, deploying, and working with highly complex and highly dangerous machinery that responds to different situations with a whole variety of sensors and algorithms. This is nothing new. You go to any industrialized workplace and you'll see machines doing this all the time. And it's nothing to do with moral decisions. It's to do with how they sense their environment and how they respond to that. And in some ways, self-driving cars are just an extension of that. And we're fairly used to developing machines that sense their environment and they make decisions based on it. Now, of course, you're going to have some environments where there is no good decision. There are going to be consequences, whatever decision is made. And there you can develop algorithms which help you navigate that. Of course, you're going to get to that moral dilemma where there's going to be somebody that's harmed no matter what the decision is. And we even have that with current technologies. But I think that the instances that's likely to happen in are so few and far between that I think it's a bit of a straw argument around self-driving vehicles. And I don't know what the figures are, but say you discover that sort of once in 10,000 years, you're going to have the sort of moral dilemma that you might imagine. Then the question is, do you fixate on that or do you look at the more pragmatic ways in which there are going to be risks and benefits here? And the third thing I would add to that is one of the things that really worries me about these discussions around moral decisions and ethics is it's too easy to take obvious solutions off the table. So you talk about the trolley problem and say, well, what if a self-driving vehicle has to make a split second decision of whether it knocks over sort of five old people or one toddler? Sort of how does it make that decision? Of course, the answer is you engineer it so it never has to make that decision. You engineer in fail safes so you are never faced with having to kill one person or one group of people or another. And this is how you do good industrial or even sort of good technological design.
What conflicts might arise from allowing multiple companies to program their own technology?
That's a good one. So of course, there are advantages because innovation really flourishes where you've got competition and competing ideas and competing ways of doing things. And you avoid a lock-in where you can not only lock into a certain technology, but you can lock into certain potential risks as well. But there are dilemmas, especially when it comes to best practices and regulation. So of course, there's got to be regulation and governance around self-driving vehicles. And one of the ways you can do that is to put stipulations on exactly how a vehicle operates and how it makes decisions. But if you've got multiple different ways in which vehicles are operating, that sort of regulation is very hard to enforce and it becomes very restrictive. So that's a potential downside. The solution or the approach to dealing with that is to have regulations that are far more adaptable, far less prescriptive in terms of the technology, and far more focused on the performance of these vehicles and these technologies. So if you have performance-based regulations, you can have a lot of different technologies, a lot of different technological solutions in there. And so those performance-based regulations might be sort of how cars respond to different traffic environments and different traffic signals. How do they respond to different events on the side of the road or different types of events? So, for instance, a plastic bag blowing across the street or something like that. So you're looking at how they perform and you say, we don't care what the technology is like, that's a black box to us, but we care deeply about how it responds to different situations. And in that case, I actually think you can have a really rich variety of technologies on the road.
Jumping to the like rideshare and public transportation level, how will this tech affect the ride-sharing industry? Like I'm thinking about how like ride-sharing crippled traditional taxis.
So what happens when we put all of the Uber drivers out of business because you've got these self-driving or fleets of self-driving vehicles driving around? It's really easy to speculate on this and to speculate that, of course, self-driving vehicles are just going to put a lot of people in the gig economy out of business. I actually don't think it's going to pan out that way. I think it's going to be far more complex and far less predictable. I do, though, think that both companies that rely on the gig economy and individuals that rely on that gig economy are going to have to start thinking now about how it might potentially impact them and how they're going to adapt. What I suspect we will see happen is that there are going to be some people that always will want a human driver. So there'll always be that market there. And then there'll be people, especially the early adopters, that really want to experience the new technology without a driver. And then that creates both a marketplace with different options and different possibilities for entrepreneurially minded people to find a way of succeeding within that. So I don't think it's going to be a case of this is just going to put people out of work, but I do think they're going to think harder to work out how they create those job opportunities.
Do you think some areas might ban the technology? Some have with Uber.
You know, they could do. Anything's possible here. And the sorts of things that are likely to influence potential bans are a lack of confidence in the safety of the technology, concerns over job security, again, coming back to the possibility of the technology putting people out of work, public perceptions around the technology. So no matter how safe or how good the technology is, if communities feel uneasy about the technology being in their neighborhood, they really don't want it, that could lead to bans in some areas. So I think it's entirely plausible that we will see that.
What benefits do you see for consumer safety if ride-sharing goes driverless?
Potentially quite a lot. And of course, this is difficult because you're trying to compare an as yet largely unproven technology with a proven technology. And the proven technology is humans behind the wheels. And we know that people driving cars is pretty dangerous, but it's a danger that we know. And so there is always that uncertainty about whether there are going to be unexpected or unforeseen risks with the driverless technology. But on the other hand, if you look at the potential benefits, and I mentioned people are pretty dangerous when you put them in a car. And we see that from the statistics of either near misses or crashes where you have injury or crashes where you have death. And I think there's a strong argument to be made with the self-driving technologies we're seeing at the moment that we have the potential to significantly reduce those near misses, those injuries, and those deaths from the technology. So that, to me, is a big plus if we get it right. And we've got to think broadly about what are the potential downsides here. The other side of this, though, especially if we're thinking about potential benefits, is just thinking completely differently about mobility. So we're locked into this idea that the best way of getting from A to B and the best way of giving people freedom is to give them license to drive their own vehicle or a rented vehicle. But with self-driving technologies, we can completely disrupt that mindset. We can think in completely different ways about mobility getting from A to B. And that means that we can move away from car ownership. We can move away from only certain people being allowed to drive. So at the moment, you can only drive if you're above a certain age, if you've got your license, if you don't have certain disabilities. So immediately, we have the potential of self-driving technologies opening up the possibility of people having autonomy when it gets to mobility that we just don't have at the moment, which is incredibly exciting. And of course, we open up the way to technologies that are far more energy efficient in terms of transportation as well, as soon as we've got self-driving vehicles. So a lot of really exciting possibilities there.
how far off do you think we are to expanding this to like buses and public transportation? Like, especially I'm thinking about buses that work in inner cities where it's complicated.
It's really hard to tell, really hard to tell. And there's part of me that would like to say that we may well see public transportation options be some of the first big applications of the technology, because it, in some ways it's a no-brainer that you have these vehicles carrying many people around that are following certain routes and very specific routes and following specific timelines and timetables. So why not just replace the driver with a machine? Very easy. The potential downsides, and this is almost, I think this is getting into the area of perceptual risks, is if you've got a vehicle with 20 or 30 people on and something goes wrong, that's many, many more lives that you're playing with the technology. And I think that that will make people think twice about deployment with public transportation. Unless we get to the point where people, again, put on a very different mindset and say, we can even do public transportation completely differently with self-driving vehicles, maybe even with little module vehicles that can pick up individual people and then link together into a longer train. So that's where I think you might see disruption and you might see early adoption, but it's really hard to predict at this point.
Going to the industrial level, truck drivers already have a really complicated system of tracking their work to be paid accordingly, and deregulation has led to less experienced drivers and lower pay. So how is this going to affect that industry?
Probably quite badly. There's been quite a bit of speculation about this, but transportation of goods in the trucking industry is one of the clear low-hanging fruits for self-driving vehicles. Again, you've got well-defined routes, well-defined objectives here. So why not just get rid of the driver, get rid of all the uncertainties and the overheads of the driver, and send your vehicle out? Of course, there are a lot of issues around potential risks still with these vehicles. But certainly if I was in the truck driving industry, I would be thinking quite innovatively about job security at the moment and thinking about what do I do to ensure that I have a job in the future when I am no longer driving trucks. And I think pragmatically how we need to think about this. Of course, there may be some conversations around whether we ban the technology because it threatens jobs. I think in the long run, if it's a technology that is proving itself and proving to be safer and more efficient and more cost effective, we've got to be thinking about how we create alternative jobs for the people that are currently working in this area.
What can people expect the driverless vehicle landscape to look like in about a decade?
It is really hard to tell at this point. And in part, I say that because things have been progressing much slower than I think we might have anticipated 3 or 4 years ago. I think the technology has come on slightly slower than people were anticipating. We got to that point where we could get sort of 80% of the way there with driverless cars pretty fast. But of course, the devil is in the detail with these vehicles. And combined with a huge amount of caution from companies developing these, who are very cautious about not putting technologies on the road that are potentially dangerous. Companies, not all companies, but some companies that are very risk averse, but also companies that are working out how you build coalitions and relationships with communities that are going to be affected by them. So things have been going slower than I think people expected a few years ago, and that makes it really hard to anticipate where we're going to be in 10 years' time. I think, though, that if you look at the different technologies that are coming along, it would not surprise me if in 10 years' time we see fairly ubiquitous use of self-driving vehicles, certainly for deliveries, certainly for transportation of goods, and to a certain extent, transportation of people using driverless taxi-like services like you're seeing with Waymo at the moment. I'm not sure we'll see the personal ownership of self-driving vehicles in many cases, although there may be some specific cases where we see that. But I do think we're going to be seeing a rise in these sorts of vehicles being on the roads, especially in places like Arizona, where the road systems are relatively easy to navigate. And I think we'll see growing acceptance that this is just part of the landscape around vehicles on roads.
That's Andrew Maynard, Associate Dean at Arizona State University's College of Global Futures, professor in the School for the Future of Innovation and Society, and author of the books Films from the Future and Future Rising. Maynard says he feels driverless technology has advanced to the point where he feels safe without a human driver in the front seat. He does acknowledge that may not be the case for everyone. Maynard says he suspects there will be a transition period for people to get used to the idea of driverless cars and see their benefits, which will ultimately outweigh perceived risks. You can learn more about the current state of driverless vehicles in Arizona and where the technology is going at cronkitenews.azpbs.org. That's also where you can listen to all our podcasts. If you like this episode, make sure to tell your friends about us and to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from. This is Arizona in Focus from Cronkite News. I'm Casey Flanagan.